It is Saturday, July 14th, 2012. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is Geek Speak, and this is KOSP Public Radio. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today's theme is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. This is a Creative Commons endeavor. Share and share alike. If you'd like to make a theme for us, we'd love to play it on air. Today on Geek Speak, we'll be covering some interesting geek news and taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Again, that's 800-655-5877. But that's in about 25 minutes. So first, let's do some news with Mr. Miles Elam. He's a software engineer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
Sir, what is your first news story? You know, tell me about something interesting and fascinating you've seen this week.
Interesting and fascinating, I've seen. I have no idea what you're talking about with that lead up.
Well, I could say, how secure do people think on their are on cell phones?
So we're talking about privacy.
Sure.
So, a person who uses their phone to check out email, check out the web, which is what a lot of people are doing these days. I mean, phone calls are so passe to use a phone for. were recently polled by the Berkeley Center for Law and Technology, and they were asked how secure or how private they believe that their communications on that mobile phone are. And this is as compared to the data that's on their home computer.
Okay, that makes sense.
And most thought they're about as private as, and about 20% or 19% thought that they are more private on a cell phone than they are on their desktop computer.
That kind of makes sense in the sense that it's with them all the time. And when you have something that's with you all the time, you feel of it like it's more private.
Right. And only 19% thought it was less private and were actually correct.
Ah. So you're saying that compared to your cell phone and your desktop computer, your cell phone is less private.
Absolutely.
And in what ways do you mean that? Do you mean that because a company knows a lot about what's going on or because there's actually vulnerabilities? I mean, what's the privacy threshold?
There are a variety of reasons. One, you have a modern culture of browsers, so you can tell exactly, you know, what browser is being used from the user agent.
Sure.
And so you know exactly what type of phone is coming in.
Why is that different?
Because a desktop may have many, many different types, and Android has a few different types. For the most part, people use the browser that comes with the
When
device.
I'm at my home desktop, I might be using Chrome or Safari or Internet Explorer. Who knows what I'm using? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really denote a lot about who I am. But when I say I'm AT&T and I'm also an iPhone, you know a lot about what's going on.
Right.
What version of iPhone.
Right. And if you have a laptop and you're going from coffee shop to coffee shop or from home, it's very hard for marketers to be able to find out who you are on a significant basis. Just because your IP address is changing, and that's one of the few ways they have, aside from tracking cookies, if you clean up your cookies on a regular basis.
So every time you go to a new location, like a coffee store, you're going to get a new IP address based on that location. In fact, you'll look like the same IP address as everybody that place. On your cell phone, it's different?
On your cell phone, your IP address will change, but each handheld device has its own unique ID.
Wow.
This can be useful for things like when you're connecting up to a service to know that you're getting the right thing. The ID is also used for push notifications.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is that ID surfaced through the web browser?
Not always, but it is surfaced to the carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always using the same carrier.
Right.
As opposed to the laptop.
Coffee shop situation.
Yeah, sure. You're going to various carriers.
So from that privacy, like I kind of inferred earlier, the company that hosts you, your ISP, your carrier, knows exactly where you are all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a privacy loss. And in a situation where you're jumping around from a laptop, no one knows exactly who you are necessarily. But you were saying desktop machines, not laptops. So
right.
We're comparing to home. At home, they know that it's your home. I mean, that's an address-based thing that your ISP also knows.
That is true. However, most desktop computers don't have GPS.
Right. So from a privacy perspective, what your ISP learns about you is, oh, you live at this address, which presumably they know because you're paying them a bill. Right. In fact, your phone carrier also knows your address because you pay the bill with them. But on top of that, every time you stop anywhere you go, they know where you are.
Yeah, they know via GPS. And even if you turned off GPS, they'd know by the triangulation of the cell towers. And so that's a feature, not a bug. Because
why do people think of their what do you think the reason is people think that their cell phone affords them more privacy than their home machine? Is it about privacy from people that they live with versus privacy from a corporation they don't really care about?
A combination. Privacy from those around them because it's their personal device. Also, by virtue of the fact that you were always moving around, you're always in a different place, because of us moving from place to place, we tend to consider that to be a unmonitored activity.
Right.
When
so
in
we
fact,
don't think
it's
about that.
More
it's greatly monitored.
Also, you have apps, and this is one recent dust up that's come up with Facebook, is that they had a feature in there that read your address book data.
Right.
And then pulled that data out and started
and kind of saved it. Yeah.
And many apps actually can do that, can read the address book data. It's one of the APIs with the iOS SDK.
It's actually a feature that's been added recently to the newest version of the OS, is that you will actually get prompted when you install an app to whether you want the app to have access to that data. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, GPS has been one of those things where when you install an app, there's two things that an app is normally requesting and actually informs the user of. Whether GPS can be available, location services.
Yeah.
And the other one would be whether it's okay to do push notifications, whether you want the device to push you things. Mm-hmm. So if you're in an Apple environment, you'll see those notifications all the time. Do you want this or not? And your decision really defines how the apps what kind of privacy you trust with the app, right?
And if you accept push notifications, that means that your device ID is being sent to that company, because that's the only way that you can uniquely identify you and send out.
So what you're saying is that request is really a way for the company to find out what your ID is.
Yeah.
That's kind of creepy. Okay,
it's necessary because an email address would not be sufficient. We all check our email address, many of us check our email address.
When I'm using
more than one place.
Some app like Instagram or something, assuming they have push notifications, when I say, I do want push notifications enabled, it's going to take the ID of my phone, some unique identifier of my phone, send it to Instagram's app, and the app can then do what it will. And normally what it'll do is to send it back to its servers, so that when someone sends me a message through Instagram service, they can notify the carrier, I guess.
No, they're notifying
ID.
Apple.
They notify Apple.
Apple has
with the
ID. Push notification
server.
Infrastructure.
Okay.
There.
So slowing back or backing up a little bit, this is in the Apple environment, but these kind of concerns exist all over the place. We're just talking about the iPhone environment because we both have them, so we know them better. But the upgrade that I'm saying about the OS, the newer OS, iOS version SDK, is that it's going to support notifying the user about address book access. Mm-hmm. And right now, any app you install actually has access to your address book. Is that right? Or could have access?
Yes.
Interesting.
The apps are vetted, but yes, this...
Yeah. Yeah.
It is available.
Right.
And... really, having that address book information available is useful. Like, for example, if I'm using Skype, I don't want to have to bounce back and forth to find out the phone number for someone. I want to just be able to find the user and then go.
Right. And if I'm playing Farmville, I want my phone to automatically send an email to everybody saying that I'm playing Farmville. That's the part that happens,
right.
Of course, right?
And that's something that's really useful.
By the way, never and never will play Farmville.
When you were talking about the notifications from iOS saying this application wants to know your location data, do you want to allow it or not? And that's useful for Google Maps, for example, to know where you are so that you can say, I want to find out where I am, how do I get to place X? And it's very similar to when you're on Facebook and you say, I want to use this app or I want to use this game like Farmville. Mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. And then you go to a screen that says, do you want to give access to the Farmville? And they're asking for your friend data and your data and then it. And there's this checklist of things that they're saying, we want to have all of this data. And you have to say yes or no.
Right.
And that's really what we're talking about here, is knowing that information.
It's interesting because as web developers, we've been seeing that space kind of explode with OAuth systems. And one of the things that I've been noticing that Google's doing...
OAuth. Here, what is OAuth?
Well, let's not go into it. But the ability for you to authenticate off of another server and then get access to some other system.
In other words, it's like what we're talking about with Facebook, is that the apps are not Facebook, but they connect and talk to Facebook.
Right. And so...
you need to give certain, one of the things you need to allow permissions for that app to do stuff.
One of the things I've been seeing for Google, Google has the same type of system where you can authenticate and you can also access address book and all that thing for apps and other services. And one of the things that Google seems to be doing is that you can say yes to an app and then say no to some of those features. And so then that app can't access those features, right? So let's say we did have a web service and I want to use that service, but all I want to do is authenticate. I only want to say that I really am Troxel at Google, right? At Gmail, rather.
Actually, you never see the name. You are just given a token.
Well, actually, one of the things that happens automatically when you do authenticate is you normally get the email address, that the service name is how you reference it. So that's one of the things that's hard to disable.
You do have to request it, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really?
There's nothing technically in the spec that requires it.
So, but the service might also say, Google might also say, hey, this service wants access to your address book. And I say, no. You know, so it's like, and Facebook, unfortunately, doesn't do that right now. You can either accept the app and all of its desires or not. And so when you're building applications, these types of apps, Facebook apps and stuff, you want to be very aware that some users will not accept your terms if you want too much data.
Right.
So privacy. And let's get back to privacy. Yeah.
Well, I just want to play devil's advocate. There is a reason for behavior like that.
Absolutely. There's features that are wonderful.
Well, no, it's not so much that. It's that applications are made with certain requirements, mm-hmm. if you will, certain needs. Like if you have a, let's say, a notification app, but they can't get access to your email address, that notification app isn't very useful.
Absolutely.
You know, or access to your address book to be able to send out invites.
You know, one thing that I'd love to see growing, I have a relatively large address book. I've got like 750 or so contacts in my address book. And what this is it's all the people I know, it's all the people I've ever worked with, and all the people I've ever done business with, right? So a lot of these people are just not people I want to be connected with in any way. Mm-hmm. And yet when I say I want to, you know, I want to potentially connect with people through Facebook, through my address book, for example. You know, look at your address book, look at everybody in Facebook and invite the people you know, kind of thing. Like I messed up with LinkedIn recently. What I would love to see is an ability for me to choose a group or a set of people that I actually want to connect with, rather. And these kind of things are going to change and grow as we go, I'm sure. Should we go on? So the privacy thing is, people think they're more private on their cell phone. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They're much more private on their desktop computer than on their...
and more private on a laptop, as long as your laptop leaves the house.
Now, the thing is, the thing I have about this is that since it's a small screen and it's in your hand, you have that effect. I mean, I wonder if that's why we have this experience of these giant social network explosions, not just from everybody has a smartphone, or a lot of people have smartphones now, but also that because it's an intimate thing, because it's so small and intimate, it feels so private, even though you're sharing your, you know, what you ate for dinner with 300 people.
Yeah, that's quite possible. I don't know for sure. We should probably talk to a psychologist about this.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the same time, it's like, I always feel odd knowing what I know whenever I see people saying, this person checked in at this location, this person checked in at this location. And I keep thinking every time I see one of those, wow, I know where that person lives. I know they're not home.
Right. Like, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Why don't people get that? I mean, maybe it's one of the things I do with those is I go, well, is this something that I want the public to know? And that's the way I decide on whether something goes online, right? Whether I'm okay with anyone in the world knowing.
Right.
And I think that you should always do that, even when you're pretty aware that it's a private network, whatever, that there's that situation. I mean, it's true that you can make private groups in Facebook. In fact, recently a group of friends and I created one to specifically send and share content about the kids. And I'm using it and I'm thinking, yeah, it's safe until Facebook messes up and changes privacy settings, right? I mean, also, the URLs for those images, I don't know if they're really secure. They probably aren't. They're probably just a very complicated URL. And if that message got forwarded, I mean, it just seems like knowing the amount of problems that are going to emerge, I'm very aware that these online services are not a private space. And you should kind of be aware of that the entire time.
Yeah.
even email or sending. I mean, have you gotten a situation where you send an email to someone and you're communicating some concern, an issue, and you might reference somebody else, and you definitely don't want that other person to be to hear the way you're speaking, and yet then when the person responds to you, they write an email, do a reply all, and they add this other person, and so all of a sudden this person that you were talking about is added into the thread, right? So now what I'm doing is I'm writing all my emails with the understanding that it's okay if everybody else reads it, which makes the email much more less to the point. Yeah, it's more,
makes it more civil.
It makes it more civil, but it's also make, you know, a little more subtle. And it's definitely not the most effective way to communicate some concerns. So then I end up being on the phone a bit more. Should we move on away from privacy?
Sure.
You're not private on your phone. Your phone is not a private thing at all in any way. There you go. Hey, last week, I think it was last week, we talked about Apple kind of dropping its support for its recycling bill. Like somebody talked to me in the
EP,
week saying that their new laptops wouldn't be recyclable at all. And I don't know if covered
that's
it.
That's actually not true.
That's what I heard. And I thought that doesn't sound right because Apple seems to be always on top of it. So what's the story right now?
Yeah, there's a group called EPEAT, and Apple, like all the other members of EPEAT, are voluntary contributors to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had said, like, all the items that qualify for it, here's our list. And they withdrew from that. It didn't mean that their products changed, though. Their products were still the same as they always were. In fact, in some ways, far exceeding the...
Why'd they pull from it?
I don't know, actually. However, they have backtracked. And this is mostly because of the backlash that's come about. Because many government organizations,
they like
most notably that I'm aware of, in San Francisco, they would only allow purchases from EPEAT certified devices, and so basically Apple was
EPEAT, right?
EPEAT.
Ah, well, that explains it. That's why you're saying Pete, not Pat. Okay, so go on.
And so they were very clearly going to be losing some sales. So they went, hey, EPEAT, we went back in. And EPEAT was like, sure. So now we're back to where it was 2 weeks ago.
Right. So to recap, EPEAT is a voluntary group that their slogan, if you will, use EPEAT to compare, let's see, your hub for green companies. You know, it's like this kind of... let's see. I want to get a mission statement a bit about it. EPEAT is the definitive global registry for greener electronics. It's an easy-to-use resource for purchasers, manufacturers, resellers, and others wanting to find and promote environmentally preferable products. So what they basically do is they allow for a clearinghouse where people can register what they're doing with their practices and kind of make light of how their systems work and how recyclable they are and everything. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, they kind of get ranked to some degree. Is that the best way to explain it?
Yeah, it's similar to, although it's not a governmental organization, it's similar to like a USDA grading of various meats and services.
This is great. This is our mission. I love it when companies do this, right? Our mission: operate the most successful global environmental rating system for electronic products, helping connect purchasers to environmentally preferable choices and thereby benefiting producers who demonstrate environmental responsibility and innovation. Now, this group, EPEAT, EPEAT.net, is totally a corporately created entity,
yes.
Right? It's made by a collection of people that make electronics. And the point is, and you can, you know, what I can tell about it is the header of the image is green, right? Everything you're talking about is green technology. Green. Feels very marketing to me. I understand that regulation to some degree is helpful in this situation, but that we then see companies saying you only purchase if you're getting certified by EPEAT, and EPEAT's really a self-certification system. It seems a little disingenuous, you know?
Well, it's self-certification, but it also has certain guidelines. Mm-hmm. And like, not all Apple products are on their list. Like, they do have a certain level, a certain set of guidelines, and so it ends up being self-policing.
Yeah.
And there are things like, is it Energy Star 5.2?
Right.
You know,
right.
Certified,
so Apple pulled themselves from the listing. They decided not to participate anymore. Companies said, well, if you do that, we're not going to be able to buy from you because that's part of our regulations.
Governments,
large purchasers said, not going to buy from you. Apple said, okay, we'll come back. And EPEAT said, great, yeah, come on back. Because, of course, it makes the organization stronger.
Yes.
All right. Self-regulation in green technology. Thank you.
The market worked.
assuming they're doing a good job of making products that are environmentally friendly. That's the thing that always concerns me about this kind of stuff.
Well, the thing is, there's nothing... I'm fairly certain that there's nothing on there that actually is blatantly bad. And no system is going to be perfect, whether it be run by the government or run by a consortium of companies.
Right.
But I do believe that it is a good faith effort.
I would agree.
And that it is better than the alternative, which
of
is
nothing.
No one has any idea what different companies are doing.
Hey, transparency in what you're doing is always a good thing.
Yeah.
Also, you know, if some company did submit stuff and they were not telling the truth about it, and then that could be followed up, that would be really bad for them. So that kind of be open about your manufacturing process is a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that they allow other companies to find the best practices in the industry by sharing them more is great as well. So small manufacturer decides, oh, we want to move to a different type of technology that's less bad for the environment. What are the benefits and such? And this is a great resource for that. All right. So that's about EPEAT.net. If you want to learn more. Of course, everything we talk about on GeekSpeak is up at geekspeak.org a little bit after the show finishes. And I got to say, Miles, I've been cranking at the new website, just working my tail off. Probably three nights this last week since the last show, I spent long hours working on this. I'm doing it on Ruby and Rails just because of the technology I know pretty well. I'm using this package of Ruby Rails called Active Admin that allows me to kind of have an administrative backend pretty easily. The user interface is not as good as what we have in our current tools, but it runs and it will run on a live site. I'm hoping to have a beta version of this running by next week's show. I don't think it's going to be a big deal. I've got all the database content from the old system into the new one. I've got all the MP3s over. I'm about to get all the JPEGs over. The only problem I've got, and I'm wondering if you want to tackle this, is that your old text compiling tool, mtext, which called, I think I named it Miles Text, right? mtext.
Yeah.
It's a parsing tool that takes simple text with a little bit of markup and turns it into XML.
It's simplified wiki syntax.
It is.
A simple one.
It is. What I would love is a translator that makes that into HTML that I could easily use, preferably in Ruby. Interested? I didn't think so. But what about in JavaScript? You want to build that in JavaScript and I'll just throw it on as a...
I'll have to find the old code. I actually did write one in JavaScript.
See, that'd be great. And we'll just implement on the pages and just let it be that that's how it is.
just to give a background to folks, our website used to be really good.
At one point.
Or I mean, like, at least it wasn't broken. It was stayed up. It was reasonably aesthetically pleasing. And then we hit the dark ages. And
it's been dark for a long time.
Yeah, kids were had.
We had children.
And, and different businesses were had.
I mean, the website, you know, we got a big complaint. Well, you know, anytime we get any kind of negative stuff on the show, I get lots of feedback. The show is fun, right? But we don't get a lot of negative feedback. But when we do get negative feedback, it really hurts. It's an amazing how emotional I'm like, oh, someone didn't like that. We laugh a lot, you know, and I start crying. But and it is actually kind of emotional. Somebody insulted the website recently, and I was like, okay. And then I was like, that's not that bad a website, really. It's got every show we've done since 2002. That's impressive. With all the stuff we talked about since, I think, 2004, 2006, every time we mentioned something, we put it in there. That's pretty impressive. It's hard to find that stuff.
Well, no.
But Google's great. You know?
Yeah, Google site colon geekspeak.org.
Yeah. Which is, I think that's how the search feature, the search feature is not even public, right? So the new site will definitely allow some of those features to be a bit better, but it's not going to be that drastically different, right? I mean, what we do is we collect a whole bunch of news stories, mention them real quick, and then we make a page about that. And then, of course, the podcast goes through NPR, so we're limited in some degrees on what's on that. Anyway, I'm not unhappy with the site the way it is, the way you built it, but it is very difficult to update right now. So I'm looking forward to it being simpler.
Yeah, well... There's that aspect of how I built it, and then there's that aspect of how it looks right now, the appearance, and that's,
you built that
that's
too,
all
didn't you?
Lyle.
Oh, that's me. Oh, I see how it is. So you're going to judge me, huh? Well, at least I do stuff. Oh, sorry.
On the contrary, then my back end started crashing.
So the other thing is, the other thing is that I'm about to submit, I'll submit the source code to my GitHub account, so anybody will be able to see how we actually do it. And Miles, if you would like, you're welcome to pull the HTML templates and CSS and request a merge and change the style to anything you'd like.
Right. There's also another aspect to this that I think the audience might find interesting, which is...
The cobbler's kids going barefoot kind of thing?
Well, there's that. But there's also that aspect of we actually had a mini competition going on.
Yes.
Where you were using Ruby on Rails, I was using Java EE, and neither of us wanted to use the other technology for various reasons.
Right.
And so we were kind of in this race of who is going to be less lazy and implement it first.
And you have an infant, so I win.
Right. So Lyle appears to have won by default.
Well, I haven't launched it yet. We'll see. We've gotten close before. Hey, GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. Information is at 423-2447. Again, that's 423-2447. We're also supported by, well, I'll tell you in just a second, but first, Miles, you've got a geek bet, I believe.
Yes, I do. Titan is the moon of which planet?
Saturn or Jupiter?
Saturn.
Sweet.
Yes. And it is a very, or at least in my opinion, a very interesting moon. And NASA's Cassini spacecraft, when making a flyby a while back, was showing what's called the South Polar Vortex. It's a massive swirling gas around the pole.
The cloud, so clouds of Titan, if you will. Is Titan a gas? Is it kind of like us? It's got a hard core and a lot of atmosphere.
It's got a hard core, but it has an atmosphere.
Right, okay.
Fairly opaque one, actually, if memory serves.
So the swirling vortex at its pole is cool?
Yes. It turns at a different rate from the rest of the planet, which is kind of normal because it's not attached to the surface of the planet. But the shape of it, and there's some pictures we're going to be posting up live
or on the geekspeak.org.
Yeah, that are just, it's amazing seeing the variation in our solar system.
Yeah,
and I always want to give any chance I get to show pictures of this going on.
So you're in a minute, you're going to connect to my local machine's port 3000. Lyle.laptop,
right.
Local, port 3000, submit that story. And then we're going to do a few things in this web app that's an old version of Ruby on Rails that I'll then submit. Then I'll start up Tomcat server to run a Cocoon system that you ran that will pull in, what's the active server pages, JSP? JSP pages, which produce XML. I wrote the JSP pages.
XSP.
XSP, thank you.
Yeah, they weren't XSP. Even JSP. They were,
right.
They were,
so there's XSP pages that I created to pull the stuff out of the database that makes it then XML, and then the sitemap of Cocoon takes that XML, translates it through an in-text translator, which is your code of Java, and then through XML, XSLT translations that turn it into HTML, and that hopefully would service the page.
Turns it to XHTML.
XHTML, yeah. That's right. Then hopefully that services the page in my browser, and it crashes a lot. So then I see an HTML document of the file. After the show is over, we'll edit the podcast, we'll take the MP3, we'll put it on my laptop in a certain directory with a certain naming scheme. Then your Cocoon app, or my XSP page, will grab that file, reference to it, make the HTML document. I will then save as HTML to a file system. Then I'll open up QtFTP or some FTP protocol and copy that HTML file and the MP3 file up to the server. Then I have to do it for the show page, the 2012 page, and the home page. Then, after all of that, I have to bounce Cocoon about 3 times to clear the cache, and it's easier. Anyway, I bounce it a couple times. Clear the cache of Cocoon. Start up again and do the RSS feed that's a secret URL that's for NPR. I confirm that to make sure that the XML is valid with the right content. I download that as a saved XML document. I upload that to the web server. Then, a few hours after that, NPR grabs a copy of it and our podcast update.
Okay,
that
so
is why.
So let's sum up here everything that's wrong with our workflow right now. Number one, our website is horribly over-engineered for what it needs to do.
It's just a blog. The one thing that's kind of nice about it, when it does work, when we have a lot of geeks in the house, is that you're adding your shows, which we call headlines, and Ben adds them and Al adds them all at the same time and turns them on all at the same time. And we don't collide with each other. Like right. If we had like a WordPress blog going, we'd have collided with each other. So there's probably plugins that do exactly that.
It used to be that we would all do this and it was on the site. It was already done.
Yeah, you push live and all of a sudden the story was just up. It
right.
was awesome.
Yeah, not anymore.
Not so much.
Just because there's a term for this and it's called bit rot.
Yes. And actually what happened is when we migrated at one point from our ISP migrated our system from
from Ubuntu server
to
Red
CentOS.
Hat.
Yeah. Java stopped. The Java workflow started crashing once in a while. We're not really sure why.
Well, yeah. We talked to some folks about that, and they're like, oh, yeah, on Red Hat Enterprise Linux, yeah,
Java's
Java
not
has,
real working well.
Has some issues.
And it was more that, you know, it was one of those things where if you and I spent a day on it together, we would have fixed it. But we didn't want to.
If you put anyone in front of a problem, they would have fixed it.
But every time we went, oh, let's fix this, instead it was like, well, let's build a new one. So we've been doing let's build a new one for about 3 or 4 or 6 years. I mean, it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And since January, I've had this process where I hand edit the site up, which is a nightmare, especially when you host. Oh, I don't want to talk about it because you have to email me files and editing. And every time I do it, I was like, well, I could just run a Ruby script or, you know, some kind of bash file to do all this. And I'm thinking, wait, if I write that, I'm not working on the new site. So anyway, I'm quite happy that we're working on the new site. By the way, I would decide to go into that whole long list because it seems that people love it when we actually get really technical. So that was kind of pseudo-technical.
Yeah. But just so everyone knows, like, our website is the equivalent of all that stuff in the back of your refrigerator that you don't want to clean out.
Absolutely. It's that box you were going to take to Goodwill, but you decide to keep it, and then you open up every once in a while, or the 15 boxes. That's what it is. Hey, we're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. It doesn't have to be web development, but we are very much able to answer web development questions. It's probably... If together, Miles and I together are probably the best at web development stuff. But you can ask us anything you'd like. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And I'm going to go ahead and give that information again in just one more second. But first, I'm going to let you know that we're supported by Crusoe's Velocity Internet and Phone Service. Velocity achieves download speeds of up to 40 megabits per second with nationwide phone service included. More information is at velocity.crusoe.com or at 459-6301. My name is Lyle Troxell. I'm speaking with Miles Elam. Yeah, that's what he is. Yeah, Miles Elam.
That's and, what I am?
Are you sure? I work at UCSC supporting a high-tech art program, which means I'm savvy in a lot of different type of tech because of that, I guess. And Miles is a programmer and political junkie. And together, we do Geek Speak almost every week for like 11 years. And we're going to take calls now. It looks like we're going to take a call from Seaside as soon as Rick punts it in. So do call us. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. He's not piping it through. You want to do news real quick? Got a news story?
Yes, I do. New York City, always on the forefront of technology. Now, everyone out there knows that payphones are harder and harder to find. They're being ripped out. Like, you have phone companies saying, like, they're just not worth it. They get vandalized and, you know, people don't use them. Like, who wants to put a quarter into this device when you have a cell phone in your pocket?
Totally.
So what do we do with them? Well, New York City is... trying out a new pilot program where they're turning those payphones into public hotspots.
Oh, cool.
So the idea is that when you get close to it, you're able to, you know...
Use Wi-Fi.
Whatever, yeah, do whatever you're going to be doing from your laptop or your smartphone or from, you know, whatever.
Which makes sense in a city like that because in a city, cell phone service is always difficult. You have large buildings to get in the way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's also the issue of... Actually, I found cell service to be pretty consistent when I was in New York City.
Because they slam it with towers.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
there's
so many towers there.
Yeah, but something that's interesting is that payphones are highly visible. And the reason they are so is because... You know, not too long ago.
They advertised.
Yeah, you wanted to know where you could make a phone call. And so they became these landmarks. And so now that landmark is simply hosting a slightly modified technology. And it's a nice recycling of both infrastructure and of that quality of a city.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
I find
I
really
like
appealing.
Because they already have power. They're highly local. They've already got some height to them. So
they already have a connection to the phone company.
They already have a connection to the phone company. It's kind of everything you need. It's really, really kind of a cool idea. So New York's doing that as a public service, I'm assuming with a tax or something?
Well, they're trying it out now.
Pilot program.
Yeah, as a pilot program with it has a range of like a couple hundred feet.
Right. Wi-Fi access points. That's cool. I like that idea.
It's but only in 10 locations, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it'll grow, I'm sure. Well, let's go ahead and take some calls. Now, I mentioned earlier that we can take calls about anything, or that's what I normally say. And here's one that we probably won't be able to answer very well because Ben's not here. But from Seaside, Rick, welcome to Geek Speak. Everything seems to be fine, Miles. Oh, but that's turntable. Hi, Rick. How's it going?
Going good.
What's your question today?
My question is, my wife and I are going to spend a month, October, in France, and we're trying to research which would be the best type of smartphone to take with us. Right now, we both have Androids. We're contemplating going one of us over to an iPhone, but we're still playing with that idea. And I just wonder, overall, which would be the best smartphone overall, big picture, to have traveling with us? Not for cell phone use, but more for data and web surfing and restaurant reviews, things like that.
Well, okay. So a couple things about this answer. First off, Ben knows the answer to this question. He's not here.
I actually do as well.
Okay, good. Yeah. I had friends that are just moved to France for a year, and they both have iPhones, and they one of them updated the iPhone they had so that it would take a SIM card, or the newer version, if you will, so that they can be in Europe. They use Verizon, I believe, and that's
Verizon locally. I don't know.
Locally, they use Verizon, I'm saying, but their phone, therefore, supports the right protocols. But they're using iPhone 4s. And the other person of that couple is going to buy a phone when they're there. And I'm not sure what they're getting. And then Ben travels all the time to Europe, and he uses an Android phone. You already have Android's phone, so there's no reason to get a new phone, most likely.
Wait,
and now Miles, Android answer correctly.
Android phone through which service? Who's your carrier?
Verizon.
Okay, that's a problem.
So it wouldn't matter. I'd have to have the phone chip switched over to GIS, right?
No, actually, chances are your phone doesn't support GSM, which is
GSM.
The
it's CDMA. Yeah.
The newer phones normally support multiple antenna types or multiple protocol types,
but they maybe also be locked down.
But they might be locked down.
Yeah,
and that's the thing that's tricky.
My advice: if you're planning on, how long are you going out there for?
Roughly a month.
Okay.
Well, your phone's going to work fine. That's the thing I want to say is, if you don't want a phone, you just want an internet service device, you can use the phone you've got right now. You just won't have cell coverage. You'll just have Wi-Fi coverage.
Yes.
Anywhere you get a Wi-Fi access point, you'll be fine.
Right. But I'm assuming you want to be out and about and use the phone like you do now.
Not necessarily. We're all going on vacation to enjoy things. I don't want to, have a phone tacked to my brain. But for a restaurant review, or hey, we want to go visit this vineyard, let's see, what the reviews are, just that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to suggest that you go to geekspeak.org or just send us an email, geeks@geekspeak.org. Ben will see that and he'll give you his feedback. He's got Android. He travels a lot. So that'll help to some degree.
Right. And I also have another possibility, which is you can always go on to Craigslist or something similar and get an old, maybe even somewhat obsolete version of an Android device. That would work with GSM. And then take that over and be relatively cheap. There's also...
The other thing to do is that the variety...
Europe also has a great selection of good phones.
Yeah,
so you may just be worth it just buying a pay-as-you-go phone when you're over there.
Yeah. I mean, pay-as-you-go phones... Yeah, pay-as-you-go phones you can get with the internet service as well. So that is one way to do it. Just do it when you get there. So the other thing is, don't keep in mind that you do pay Verizon a monthly fee, probably quite a bit, as we all do with our phone carriers. They want to keep you as a customer, and the idea of you looking because you're traveling, they do handle that problem, right? In the sense that they don't want to lose you. So it's maybe a little frantic of them, but they will whistle your direction as much as you want them to about what you need to do. And you can definitely look up your phone model and find out what kind of antenna it has, or system it has. So I would look on Verizon's site and start talking to them a little bit now, because at least you'll have a feeling on whether you want to stay with them or not, depending on how well they do with their customer service, I guess. Does that make sense,
okay.
Rick? All right, thanks. And do send us an email so that Ben sees it, because I think you'll have some good input on this. And when you do send that email, let us know what model of phone you have. That will help. Thank you so much for the call.
I will do that.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
And just a quick follow-up. It doesn't apply to our caller per se, but for folks like myself that do have GSM service, either if you have T-Mobile or AT&T, one thing if you're going overseas to watch for is absolutely positively do not do data roaming.
Because it's too expensive.
It is very expensive.
Yeah, be very careful. If you're traveling, just don't go, I won't deal with it.
Right. And in fact, I would recommend if you have a GSM phone right now and you're going overseas,
Turn it off.
Don't take your phone. Take a different phone.
Yeah.
Or, you know, do something like that. Like,
interesting idea. Well, the thing is, like in the iPhone interface, make sure it's easy to turn off
data roaming. Make sure the data roaming is turned off on your phone
right,
if you are going to
take
your phone.
Right, you will get nailed hard if you do not do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, when we say nailed, we mean like $10,000 bills.
For a month in France.
Yeah.
From San Mateo, Dante, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, am I on the air?
You are on the air right now.
Oh, okay, great. First of all, I'm not a geek, but I'm interested. I use a computer to sell things online, and I use the popular sites to sell my antiques and jewelry.
Are you talking about eBay?
Well, yeah, I use that and some other sites. But I would like to have my own site, and I don't know how to go about doing it. I'd like to have a site for e-commerce, in other words, and I was wondering if there are platforms that I could use. I do have a Blogspot blog, and
I've got a simple solution for you that I personally like a lot. I haven't set up a store for it, but it's called Shopify. Shopify.com. I'll put it up on GeekSpeak's website as well. And it really, like, here's the homepage of it. Create your e-commerce store today with Shopify, right? Got a video. It's easy online store builder. You can customize it. It's pretty cool. And it's exactly, the market is exactly for someone like you who's going to start a small store and do something. And the only thing you want to think about is sometimes these companies do well with certain types of things, right? So it might not be the right solution for selling tickets for venues, which is one of the online store commerce thing, or selling large inventories of something like records, where you have a situation where you might have three copies of one thing. And you don't really want to put it in twice, three times. Sometimes every item is actually unique in the sense that, you know, one record might be a better quality than the other because of a scratch or something. So those types of complications make these kind of out-of-the-box solutions a little more difficult to use. But for something like just have some items you want to put on and have a store, I think Shopify is probably a good solution for you. Miles, what do you think?
And you're on Etsy too, right?
What's that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on Etsy.
Etsy?
I would like to have my own site. I don't like to have all their graphics and everything. I would like to just have my own bare bones site. I don't want to have, you know, advertising for whatever company. And how much does that cost?
I don't know. You'd have to go to we actually are a non-commercial station, so we actually don't talk about prices of things because that would be a commercial. And I'm not endorsing Shopify at all from KOSP's perspective or the board's perspective. Just personally, I think it's pretty simple. There's some other solutions.
Well, that's the thing, though. If you want to have something that is absolutely tailored to what you want, there, without anything extra that advertises that you're with someone else, chances are it will be you're getting to the area of do-it-yourselfer. Or at least going to a site that has that needs a little bit more legwork, more geek work.
Well, I do. You know, I do pretty well. I use Photoshop pretty well. I have a blog and all that. But I would like to be able to turn my blog into a store.
Yeah. Doing that is a little difficult in the sense that you're kind of. It's not possible, but there's a bit of work to be done to merge those things together. So you could, of course, go and get a hosting package and go to a local ISP. Like, I don't know who you use for your internet service, but let's say you use something like Cruise.io. They're going to have packages for hosting and an e-commerce tool as well. But the time and energy to take to make those things all work and seamless is some serious time. Like, if I were to do that for somebody, I'd be charging some serious money, right? Like, week of work kind of thing to do that, and that's going to cost you. It's going to take you a long time to get the skill level up to make that work. But there's these great, you know, like the Blogspot thing. It's easy. You just push a button, fill out a form, and you've got a blog. And the same thing with something like Shopify, you know. And you can customize those things. So even a...
Well, in fairness, there are... It's not quite as bad as it maybe... putting out right now. There are a lot of vendors out there that have like shopping cart software in PHP that you can put up there.
And they'll even customize it for you at a small fee.
Yep. Right. Well, they're also fairly customizable.
Mm-hmm.
But you may be more limited in terms of your choices of layout.
Where do you get shopping cart software?
Don't go to shopping cart software, because what will happen is you'll go into this giant... giant offerings of all these different products, and they all work for, they're all targeted for different types of users, right? So a shopping cart system that Miles and I might use would be like a library in a certain language of our choice that would allow us to integrate in.
No, I was thinking of an entire PHP package.
And then there's full packages that allow you to install it on, and then there's modules, plugins for like a blog tool like WordPress that you can get. And there's hundreds of these things. Like literally hundreds of these things. So it's more about where you're actually hosted right now, who you're paying, and what they serve, what they offer, or getting a complete service package from somebody else. So it's a complicated question. It's almost like we need to do seminars on this kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to offer, because last week I offered SEO, and I'm trying to find an SEO show. So we're doing that soon. And it's hard when I make a commitment to the listener. So I'm not making a commitment to you.
SEO, or did you say SEO?
SEO. Search engine optimization.
It's a big topic. We're going to be covering it in a local, in a soon show, which will be interesting to anybody that does online selling. So
yeah.
Do take a look at Shopify, see if it fits your concerns, and do send us an email if you'd like a bit to keep us in, you know, keep in contact with us. We don't spam people. We don't send emails much, but we always read your emails, and we'll definitely respond when it piques our interest. Thank you, Dante, for the call.
Okay.
And you, what's your website?
It's frenchatheart.com.
frenchatheart.com.
That's the email.
Oh, email address. Oh, I see. Okay, well, now everybody knows your email. Sorry about that.
No. That's the website.
Oh, that's the website. Oh, okay. Yeah. Not the at symbol, but the word at.
Right.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
That's actually kind of clever. Have your website be sort of the same as your email address.
Or the company be the same with an at name. Yeah, I like that too. Yeah, I'm sure she doesn't have heart, though. Heart.net. That's a hard domain to get. Well, let's go ahead and go to Dallas, Texas. Justin, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
First-time caller. Love the show. And I sort of had a question. I was just wondering whether or not you guys had any suggestions for a good Bluetooth wireless earphone earbud pair. And then sort of a follow-up to that, why all the ones that I see that are commercially available seem to have... The buds seem to be connected by a cord, and I just wonder why we don't have the technology to separate those.
The buds seem to be connected by a cord.
The earbuds itself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Bluetooth protocol has a bit of weight to it, right? So you got to have your battery. I mean, so, okay, first off, wireless devices. So you want a stereo headphone set that's Bluetooth.
Yeah, for like an iPhone or...
Right. Right.
Sort of thing.
And it's going to need power, right? So the biggest bulk of the entire thing is going to be some kind of power supply. And you can get a day's worth of Bluetooth talk and such in a pretty small battery. But still, to make two of those would be twice the cost. Also, the protocol, when you say, hey device that deals with Bluetooth, I am a stereo device, right? So therefore, my antenna that you're going to communicate to, the protocol we're going to use is a stereo audio sending receive system. And that right there would inherently say there's one physical device that deals with the wireless, right? If you had totally separated earbuds, you're still going to have to provide audio to one of the other ones. And therefore, you'd have to have two Bluetooth devices, and you have to have your phone connected to two Bluetooth devices at the time, and that protocol is not supported.
Yeah. So, or going to one Bluetooth device and then some proprietary radio signal going to the other one that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And is Bluetooth the only option we have for that sort of thing?
Well, no. In fact, a lot of manufacturers will actually make a device to do a different type of Wi-Fi, a lower consumption protocol Wi-Fi. A good one for that, like, is Logitech. Logitech's keyboards and mice that are wireless don't actually use Bluetooth. They use this little dongle that you have to stick into USB. Phones don't support that, right? You can't add an antenna to a phone normally.
Right.
And one of the big reasons behind Bluetooth is that it becomes a standard protocol so that you can mix and match what you're doing. So no particular headset will be matched to just one phone. You know, or you can have that headset and you can be, you know, in your car with the Bluetooth or something like that.
Right. So here's my suggestion for Bluetooth devices. I personally currently like the Sony Ericsson Hi-Fi Bluetooth stereo headset with FM radio. And actually, the FM radio is the big reason I like it. Right. So it's a small device. It's got earbuds. It has a little tiny battery, and the actual antenna and everything is just a normal it's a normal plug to plug in the headphones. The device itself is about the size of a lighter, like a Bic lighter, and it has a microphone on it. So you kind of dangle this in between your breastbone, right? And so it plugs into your ears. And the thing that's nice about it is, since it has an FM radio, I can actually switch to my favorite radio station, which is KOSP, by the way.
I have a quick question, though, about this.
Sure.
In what venue are you planning on using this?
And what, like, when would I use it? Just either at work or working out. That's, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So that is a different thing than, I mean, it. If you have something where you just want to have something very small, that's one thing. If you have something that you're wanting to work out in, for example, mm-hmm. I would choose a different set of headphones.
Okay.
There are types like, I know Motorola and some others make ones that are, you know, those headphones that go over the ear and then
go on the back.
The back of your neck?
That was the second choice I was going to suggest as well, because they hold onto your head a lot better.
Okay.
And there are some good ones out there. I don't
and
have
also,
any in my shopping.
And they're also more comfortable a lot of times than the earbuds, because the earbuds, they have to stick into your ear canal and then...
And the weight is held.
Yeah,
the,
have
exactly.
a friction fit.
So we're talking about behind the head kind of wrapping one. And I saw a great review on one recently. I wish I'd added that to my wish list, but I didn't want
it. Yeah, the ones going over the ear tend to be more comfortable for longer periods of time. So when you're sitting at your desk or if you're working out, those I prefer those.
Also, I've found that with earbuds and a small device like that, it's easy to... You pull them off a lot. And you stick them somewhere, right? So you stick them in your pocket, and then your pocket has lint in it, and then the earbuds get corroded with stuff. And so ones that go around your back of your head, you can pull them down and let them hang around your neck. So it's a nice weight, and it's a relatively larger thing. It's like a pair of sunglasses, basically. Thank you for the call. If you do find something that you like, I'd love to know what it is, because I'm kind of interested in getting one myself.
Sure.
Also, we're in Santa Cruz, so Plantronics is a local company, right? And they do have products like this. So take a look at Plantronics, because, of course, it's local.
Well, I'm in Dallas, but...
No, you're in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, hey.
It's not local to you, then. Thanks for calling.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Justin. I think we're out of time today to answer anything else. We did have a call, let's see, Bob Offair, south of Watsonville, regarding security and privacy options. Have you heard of Do Not Track Plus, a company, Abine? Abine, Do Not Track. I hadn't heard about that.
No, I've heard of Do Not Track, which
what is
something that's been added to browsers recently. It's a header, and the idea is that when the browser sends this header, the server is supposed to obey that and not keep any information.
And the other thing with services, there's the Onion routers, and what that is it's a obscurity system that allows you to use the internet without it being tracked at all. Your location is free.
We don't know that particular.
We don't know that product directly. But Onion, if you're interested in being private online, you want to do something and you don't want anyone to know that you've done it, take a look at Onion Router. Onion, what is it called? Onion Router?
I don't know. Tor.
Tor. Yeah, look for Tor. Thank you.
Tor is a better. TOR.
Yeah, I think that Onion is the middle name of that Tor. The O is Onion, but I'm not really sure. Okay. We are running out of time on GeekSpeak, of course. You can find out everything we talk about at geekspeak.org. I will have the show up after I go through that giant step of thing that I do every week. Oh, my gosh. It's so frustrating. Hey, GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by home and small business tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and small business tech specializes in protecting data and has been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. By the way, I mentioned GitHub and the GeekSpeak service because I would love to have some people collaborate with our system. If you're a web developer and want to participate and know what GitHub is, please do look me up. I'm Lyle over at GitHub. And Miles is something, but he's connected to my account. You can find him. So is Ben. And we'll be doing development there publicly, and you're welcome to join us. Every week, Ben and I get together on a Google Plus Hangout and code together. And you're welcome to participate in that as well. Just connect up with us. Our email address is geeks@geekspeak.org. We are streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. This is Central Coast Public Radio, Santa Cruz. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence, and we thank him for its use. Coming up next is Car Talk, so please stay tuned for that. For GeekSpeak and for KSP, I'm Lyle Troxell, and in the air with me, Miles, thank you so much for joining me today.
Always a pleasure.
I'll see you next week. Yes, next week, yes, and the following week, no.
Yes, that's correct.
Great.